Welcome to the Sexual Mindfulness Project podcast, where we talk about creating an intentional relationship and how to find joy in slowing down, letting go of judgment, and connecting more deeply with your partner. Welcome to today's podcast. Today, I am with Bella Rose, who actually has a podcast, Delight Your Marriage, that is in the top 1% of podcasts worldwide. They are in 180 countries, over 180 countries. And not only does she coach couples who are struggling in their marriages, possibly on the brink of divorce, but she also coaches therapists who are struggling in marriages. So marriage therapists who need to turn to someone and learn some skills and perspective on how we can work more effectively at our marriages. All right. Welcome, Bella. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Oh, shalom. Me as well. Thank you.
I am really excited after just looking through some of the things that you have done, and your take on marriage comes from a wealth of experience, a wealth of hard knocks, and applying some real wisdom to these struggles that I'm going to say all of us face. There may be a few, right, who just graciously move through marriage, but that is not the norm. And so most of us are struggling with some aspect of marriage, especially intimacy. And I really love how you describe creating an intimate relationship. And I wondered if maybe that's just where we could start. How should we create intimate relationships?
Yeah, Shalom, you are absolutely right. So many of us don't have good role models. We don't have a blueprint to say, how does this work? And what the stories we have heard and seen are often drama on movies, or the stories we hear from just gossip trains, because those are the stories that get spread. And I didn't have a good example of marriage when I grew up. And so when I got into marriage, I had a completely wrong way of thinking about it. And so what I like to invite people to think about is, love your spouse the way they receive love. And I feel like that's God's design, is to love your spouse. And the thing is, you have to discover what that is. And so in my work, I really believe that God created men and women very differently. And we're equal, but we're very unique. And even structurally in the brain, men are designed with about two to three times the size, the structure of the brain around sex drive. So no, that's not always the case that the man has the higher sex drive, but about 80% of the time it is. So yeah, the men that I work with, there's just this sex drive element that's huge, and it means so much to their heart. So anyway, so I kind of try to dumb it down into a framework of, what do men really crave to feel filled up in their marriage? And then what do women really crave to feel filled up in their marriage?
That's beautiful. And so important for us to really go through that process of growth and stepping outside of our wants and our perspective and really learn what it is our spouse needs.
Yes. Yes. And if you're open to it, Shalom, I'll kind of share that framework piece that just, I think the listener would be able to help them see, like, my spouse, this is what they need just as a base level.
I love
to feel filled up.
Me too. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. So I talked a little bit about men so far, so I'll just dive into that. So for a man to feel filled up, and I think this is really biblically based, is first of all, respect. That's probably not new to those listening, but what I thought my whole marriage journey, I thought I understood what that meant, but respect really means that you're not treating him like a child. You're not correcting, criticizing, or teaching, especially in public, telling him what to do, saying, you should do this, you should do that, we need to do this, we need to do that. All of that is telling him what to do. And when you were dating, that wasn't something that was normal. But when we get married, somehow we think that one flesh means we get to mother our spouse. And so respect is the first one. So it's just really treating him like he's his own man, the same way you did before you ever felt like you had ownership over him, if that makes sense. He really is his own man. And the second is similar, but there's a tweak to it. The second one is and the admiring is really recognizing that God has unique strengths in him and God has unique designs for him. And when you as a wife, you get to honor and appreciate and just witness God at work in his life and through him, and you get to kind of that cheerleader that he wants to be the quarterback and he wants you cheering on the sidelines, whatever it may be, whether it's at work or in his personal life or with the kids, he really looks to you for that affirmation, and he's designed to. It's not the flimsy male ego that our society laughs about. It's not. It's truly how God designed him is to desire that. And it said that it wasn't good for Adam to be alone. And it's good that you as a wife get to have that level of import in him, his sense of self. And so I would encourage a wife to take that seriously and really live into that and say, I can compliment and I can encourage and I can help him be a better man in every area of his life. That's the second piece. And then the third piece is, I touched on it just a tad earlier, but is that wholehearted sexual intimacy. And you may have also thought this was coming, but the main thing that my listeners often haven't heard before, and often it's almost like the scales are taken off their eyes. We're not talking about duty sex. We're talking about wholehearted sexual intimacy, that this is part of his heart. And so it's this idea that there's a wholehearted piece and this is his heart. And when we come to the bedroom, we have an opportunity and a privilege to love him with our whole hearts and to recognize God designed him this way. And we get to love him well. And sometimes we might not be in the mood, but we're going to go in faith and start. And by God's grace, a lot of times women are designed so that they take the first step and they get started. And then it starts to really become something she wants. But a lot of times it's not she wants it and then she starts. It's a lot of times it's she starts and then she wants.
So beautiful. Mm-hmm. In fact, I want to just compliment what you're saying, because in my own research, we've actually found that to be true, that we think of the old Masters and Johnson's sexual response cycle, and it always starts out with desire, then goes to arousal, climax, and resolution. But we actually know that's not always the case, that for many women, they have to start the experience first and let arousal maybe begin before desire even starts. And that makes so much sense, because sometimes we feel that way with exercise. Like, we don't really want to go out on a run, but once we get through that first quarter mile, we're like, wow, I'm really glad I did this. This is just what I needed. So I'm just affirming what you are saying. I love it.
Oh my gosh. That is so true. It's so true. How many of us want to get to the gym in the morning or anytime, really? But we do enjoy it afterwards. You were right. Oh, it's so true. So I guess I'll switch over here to the women's side of things. If for any of your male listeners,
yes,
and also for female listeners to say, hey, I'm also on your side, ladies. I'm on your side. I promise.
Right.
So what does she need to feel fulfilled in her marriage, in her intimate relationship? I think the first thing that a woman needs to feel is known, that he knows her. She is unique. She is not like any other woman. And he doesn't pretend she is, that he seeks her out. He finds out who she is, and it matters to him. And he'll it impacts all sorts of things. It might impact the way he decides to make different choices. He knows that she'll be exhausted after a certain thing, so he's not going to try to push her into another commitment, or it just impacts all sorts of things. Or he knows that she likes salamanders, so he's going to make sure that he picks up a little salamander trinket on his way home from a work event, or whatever it may look like. He knows her. And then the second one that I think is often missed or not understood is safety. And of course, we're talking about physical safety. That is a given, absolutely. But what's often overlooked is the emotional safety. It's emotional safety, that she knows he holds her heart and it matters to him how she feels. It matters to him what she's going through, that he holds her when she cries, that he's curious about her day. When he witnesses a little bit of insecurity, he's quick to catch her in it and let her know that she's okay and she's actually doing a great job. And he wants to listen, and he's a really good listener, and he's great at asking questions.
Yeah. Boy, I'm writing all these down. I love what you're saying.
Amazing, amazing. It is just so huge. And the thing that I hope a man listening, what happens with a lot of my men that I work with, is that, and I work with men and women separately, because I really think the idea is that we each need to be trained on our own side, and then we can actually love our spouse well. But this is the missing part. So often men miss this part. They think, oh, I'm providing security by being the breadwinner. And mm-hmm. It's no, she needs the safety. She needs her emotions. Yeah. She needs her heart. And the vulnerability is huge. She needs to know that she's safe with him. And then the final piece is the wholehearted, being wholeheartedly cherished. And so what that is the romance. So that's the flowers, the surprise little gift. Just, she knows that he's thinking about her, breakfast in bed, you know, just pull up a chick flick movie and see the romance all the time. Just mimic that guy and you'll be good.
Okay. So. Right. This is a beautiful outline for kind of the ideal relationship that you're talking about, mm-hmm. that if we could actually hit each of these points as men or as women, we would probably be creating a place in our relationship of pretty, pretty sincere authenticity, right? And a place where we can really share and be known and be felt. That's really lovely. So let me just ask this, now that you've outlined this, what happens? How do you guide people when maybe, maybe the man didn't really cherish her, right? Took her for granted a little, didn't really value the things that were important to her. And so as a consequence, she loses respect, right? So we have this kind of downward spiral where we're already caught in the trap of these problems, this beautiful ideal that you've just outlined. How do we get back to it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And Shalom, I think that's where we get to win as Christians, that we've got the beauty of the gospel where no one is left where they are, you know, that we get a second chance, that our spouse gets a second chance in our heart too.
Yeah.
And so that's where we get to say, Jesus, we don't deserve your grace. I don't deserve your grace. And neither does my spouse. They don't deserve grace from me either.
Yeah.
But I'm also forgiven. And so I can forgive my spouse. And so, you know, nothing will change unless the person listening to this, for example, nothing's going to change. We can't wait around and say, well, my spouse better change or I'm not going to change. And it's just not going to work. But what does work is if the person listening, the one person says, you know what, it's up to me. And God has given me the grace to forgive my spouse. And that'll be a process. It's not a one-time, it is a process, but it's a process the person listening will need to commit to, is forgiving your spouse. Because otherwise, we're so weighed down by the hurts of the past that it's almost like carrying a big bag of bricks. Like, how do you feel energized enough to do these cool special delights, for example, to your wife, if you're just, like you said, the respect of the past has just been so, so messed up.
Yeah.
The main thing is you've got to forgive and give your spouse that clean slate so that you can have enough energy to start this thing over and start it the right way. And then have the persistence to say, you know what? I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep doing this until enough time and enough grace and enough experience under your belt. So your wife, or in this case, your wife can say, oh gosh, he is different.
Right.
He is different. And then she starts responding in a different way.
Yeah. And I think of so many people who, you know, for whatever reasons, they have gotten caught in this downward spiral. And I wouldn't want to blame one or the other, but let's just say through, you know, mutual negligence, they get caught in this downward spiral. And then, like you're saying, one person hears this message and it rings true. And so they want to respond in this way, right? They want to start giving this emotional and relational and sexual intimacy. What advice would you give if our spouse isn't, say we're the one struggling with it and we really want to change and make this, you know, reformation in our life? How do we keep encouraging ourselves if our spouse isn't responding, right? They don't notice. Maybe this is a really deep wound and we know we're going to do our part, but we are hoping to see some, you know, response and it's not quite there yet.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And this is the question, right? Because
yeah,
like a lot of people can read the books, they can consume the material,
but if
you don't have the ability to do it and implement and continue and consistently do it and implement it, it's not going to make a difference. And so in fact, sometimes it could undermine it because your wife is like, oh, something's changing. And then he stops and it's like, oh, well, never mind. I can't trust him. And then he can make it worse. So, I mean, I think really I have found, and I, this is actually not a plug, but really getting around other men that are committed to the same thing, or getting around other women that are committed to the same thing.
Yes.
And if you can pull some girlfriends together and, you know, listen to content like this and Shalom's content to say, I'm committed to this. I'm not going to let this thing go. I'm going to work at this marriage because it matters to my kids. It matters to my ministry. It matters to my work. It matters to my friendships. It matters, this marriage thing. And so I'm going to love and I'm not going to look back and I'm going to keep going and keep going. But you do need friends. You do need people that are going to say, don't give this thing up. You're doing the right thing. Keep going. Yeah, that argument happened. Yeah, there was a mistake there, but listen, let's get back up. Let's keep going. And so I would say getting around people that are running that race and doing it. I mean, this is God's work. This is what we're supposed to do, is it's putting legs on the command to love your neighbor as yourself. How do you?
Yes. I love that.
Well, this is the way.
I love what you're saying, because the opposite is true. And too often we surround ourselves with people who are also unhappy. And then we start just complaining and creating more and yes. more problems for how our perspective is on our own marriage. And so what you're saying, though, is just the opposite. Yes. And it makes so much sense, right? Surround yourself with people who believe in grace, who believe in forgiveness and repentance and the atonement of Jesus Christ, who can say, listen, love, just like you're saying, love really does have to take action. It can't just be this flimsy emotion. It has to be something we dig in and work at.
Cliched 1 Corinthians 13, love is patient, love is kind. That is action words.
Yes.
Right, Shalom? I mean, that's absolutely, how can something be kind unless it is an act? It is an act of kindness.
Right.
You're not kind unless you're doing something kind.
And that's so, right.
For no reason at all, giving your husband a back massage or giving him a text message to say, I'm so lucky I get to be with you, or what an incredible father you are. That's kindness.
Yeah.
But love is not a feeling. I love that you said that. It's so true. We have to act on it.
Yeah, you made me think of one other virtue that I think is so important when we're talking about this circumstance, and that's endurance, right? Love is long suffering. Mm-hmm. And that means long and suffering.
Yeah.
And we are wounded. And yet, if we can rely on this grace that we're talking about and tap into the power that we know we can feel, and then we can be long-suffering and endure. And it's not just enduring like in this, I'm going to grit my teeth. It's this meaningful endurance.
Yes. It really has to be a discipline of the heart. I am I am with this person. God assigned this person to me. Mm-hmm. That is God's daughter. That is God's son. I get to serve them well. I get to love them well, regardless of what the response is. Regardless of what the response is. You know, one thing I go through with my clients is to go and write out a life vision document. And the idea of that life vision document is basically, what do you want true of you when you go before Jesus, what at the end of the age, and you look into his face and his eyes, and he gives you that curious look of, what did you do with this life I gave you? And that picture really motivates me. So having that image of Christ, I mean, full of love, full of tenderness and gentleness, but curiosity, what did you do? And writing out in every area of your life, like what was true of you in your heart? Not necessarily what other people said of you, because who really is going to judge? Like, who really knows your heart? But what did Jesus see that was true of you? And, you know, I have that written out, but, you know, ideal is a little different than how I'm at. I try. That's my striving. Yeah. But what I have on there is about how I loved my spouse. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to say about how my spouse loved me back. That's not my lane. That's not my role. My responsibility is how I loved him.
Yes. And the selfish side of me says, oh, that like grates on me, right? Because we want to hold our spouse accountable. And that simply is not our job.
Yes.
I really like, you know, that as people, if someone is going through some sort of a, you know, a bump in their marriage, like what we're describing, I love that we could come back to these three principles that you've outlined for men and for women. And just kind of as a little touchstone, just go back and say, how am I respecting my husband? How am I admiring and affirming him and giving my whole heart in our sexual relationship? And if the husband is also saying, how do I make sure that she feels known, that she can see her influence in my life, and that she feels safe emotionally, physically, and that I'm keeping this romance alive, right? As we make those our touchstones, what a beautiful way to kind of check yourself, right? Like as we go through these bumps and bruises of marriage, it's intended to make us grow, but we kind of have to sometimes go back to, what are the basics? What is it I've forgotten? I've forgotten what it is I need to be doing to create real joy and, you know, love in my marriage.
Yeah, no, it really is. I mean, the monotony of life, it's so easy to just assume our spouse knows what we are needing, what makes us feel loved. We just like, well, they're intentionally not X, Y, and Z. But the truth is, they probably have just as bad of models as us, and they never were taught how to love a woman well, or they were never taught how to love a man. Where are they learning these things aside from the world's negative, negative role modeling?
Right. Yeah. The very thing that adds so much to the confusion and the misunderstandings that we have. So this kind of brings me to another question. How can we successfully face growth in our own emotional, spiritual, and physical intimacy? How can we challenge ourselves in those three areas?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, the first thing is I just need to congratulate your listener for being here, for listening to this. I mean, that's a huge step. And I love the phrase, and I really don't know where it originated, but you become the five people you spend the most time with. Now, I don't know how true that really is, but I think the idea is whose influence you're allowing into your heart, your brain, your mind, all of that is what shapes you. So when I think about you, listener, are, you know, coming to Shalom's podcast and saying, you know, I really want to learn more about marriage and intimacy and connection and all of these aspects, you're being influenced by good. It's growing you. So more than that, though, is not the material, but really being intentional. And you know, maybe the sermon on Sunday, how do we practically live that, you know, Monday to Saturday? Like, what does it actually look like? A lot of times we assume in our home is different than in every other relationship. Like, well, I can treat my spouse this way because, you know, they're my spouse. And I can treat my kids this way because, oh, you know, they're my kids. But everyone else, oh, I'm going to forgive and I'm going to serve and I'm going to love. But your own, you know, the ones that are closest to you that you actually have the most influence on, really do require the most commitment. So for me, it's funny, I just got back from sabbatical, which was just incredible. And I was expecting to have all these other goals on that sabbatical. And what I found out was really my only goal was growing as a mother. So I got some specific books that I needed help on, and I just dug right in, and it really helped. I got a coach and some others that some other close friends, I looped them into what's going on, and I needed help with that. Yeah. And what better opportunity? But you know, the people that I have the most influence on are the precious souls I'm entrusted with. And so it's the same kind of thing. Is I would suggest for a listener who's seeking to grow in this is dedicate just a small chunk of time, not crazy huge, but I would say 3 months. Have that as your top priority goal. So if you're saying, you know, our intimate connection is really lost right now, maybe it's been a long time since you've even made love. Maybe there's just, you know, very infrequent. Maybe there's a lot of difficulty of even just talking about it. Maybe she shuts down when a husband brings it up. Maybe maybe he doesn't know why things are not good, and she is not willing to share. And there's all sorts of reasons. But if you give yourself like a 3 month time frame, because I think when we focus on anything too long, it wanes, and then we're frustrated, hasn't gone. But if you can kind of gain some intensity for 3 months and really focus and, you know, do the work that's required to change yourself into the man or into the woman to love him well, to love her well, and really make these things habits. But it does take effort to implement those habits. It does take effort. So for 3 months, you're focused on the effort required to make the habits. And then from there, it's just kind of maintenance of like, oh, this is how I am now. So that's what I find is really effective. That's what I find in my programs. But then I also find that in my own personal life is I do strong intensity for a short amount of time. And then I just kind of have maintenance markers in place to make sure that I am continuing that growth, like, for example, continuing to meet with my coach, but I'm not, you know, doing quite as intense study and reflection and work.
I absolutely think this is brilliant. This is a doable plan. I mean, somebody, we can stand on our head for 3 months, right? And so if it's something scary that you know you need to face, go ahead, right? This is just 3 months. And you can give it that energy that it's likely going to require. And like you're saying, then you've got at least the initial mastery of it, and you just need to do the maintenance.
Yes, that's exactly, you know, a quarter of a year. That's how my programs are set up. And I will tell you that so many of the marriages, and I don't have percentages, but so many can transform in just 3 months, because a lot of times people are like, 3 months is nothing. That won't make a dent. But it's like, okay, well, try it for 3 months. Try doing all the things for 3 months and see if it makes a dent. Because exactly, you can use it as an experiment. Try it for 3 months.
Yeah.
And even if you see any change, you know that, okay, this is working. And you know, the other piece that will tell you is this working is if you feel like you're being more like Christ through this. You know, with this parenting journey, for me, for example, is, am I seeing the results in my kids to a degree, but am I seeing the results in my own heart? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That has to be our first marker, right? We are inside us, in our head, we can tell whether or not we are being transformed. And really, I think what we're talking about, even through this 3 months, you can rely on the grace of Jesus Christ to help you make these changes. You don't have to feel like you're completely on your own. Be more intent in your prayers and your study, and then see how it has this more permanent effect in your heart internally.
Yes. It's so true. It's so true.
Yes. Oh, these are great skills that you're laying out, and it's so simple, right? It's doable. It's something we can go about today make a decision what we want to change, and then make a small goal each day, each week that will help you move towards this 3-month goal of really making a significant change in whatever it is.
Absolutely. So yeah, Shalom, kind of what we were talking about, this 3-month focus, it's really perfect timing because as you and I talked about, we're having a free training that's based on these principles, and it's specifically for men. It's based on a program that I run for men that 3 months, but the free training is called Masculinity Reclaimed Foundations. And we basically go lesson by lesson. It's 3 free lessons, diving into this material much, much more. And how can you do it practically? And if you decide after that, you need more accountability, more coaching, the structure works for you, you need help, then you have the opportunity of joining the full Masculinity Reclaim program, which is for 3 months. And so if you want that free training, I'd love to invite you to go to delightyourmarriage.com/menscourse. delightyourmarriage.com/menscourse. And if you do join, I invited Shalom to actually partner with me in this, that she would also receive part of the benefit of that. And I just want to thank you, Shalom, so much for the opportunity to bring in this.
My pleasure. Thank you, Bella. What other advice would you give us before we have to sign off? What's some wisdom that you know is just universally applicable and something that may give a little encouragement to a listener who really is trying to strengthen their marriage or get through some bump? What's something that you would teach us?
Absolutely. Super simple, but super profound if somebody can do it consistently, is make a list in the morning every single day, write it with your own hand, pen and paper, of 10 gratitudes. And what I would recommend is, if you're going through a hard time in your marriage, make at least 5 of them about your spouse. If you're okay in your marriage, let's do 3 of them about your spouse. But,
that's
so good. If you're about to have an argument with your spouse, make 10 of them about your spouse. sometimes, like we talked about before, we need to apply our will before we see the fruit, right? We need to decide along the lines of our values before we feel the good feelings. In sex is the same way. We talked about you've got to decide you're going to go there before your body might respond. And yeah. So it's the same way with being grateful and not taking your spouse for granted, because God, you have a masterpiece walking around your home. God decided that he designed them with incredible gifts and strengths and goodness in that wonderful spouse of yours. Whether right now they're fully or not, there are good things about them, and it's your opportunity and I think your responsibility as a spouse to see those things and to be gracious with them and to have forgiveness. You know, because as kind of scary as it is, Jesus gives the story of the person who owed the big, big debt. Yes. And the king forgave him. And then he went to the guy who owed him a little debt, and he said, pay me what you have or I'll throw you in prison, something like that.
Yeah.
And then the master, the king, came back and was extremely mad at the guy who wouldn't forgive after being forgiven so much. And that's a huge deal. If Jesus looks at us and says, if you're not going to forgive your spouse, I'm not going to forgive you. Like, yeah. That's scary. And so we want to be the kind of people that, wait a second, you know what? No, he doesn't deserve it. No, she doesn't deserve it. But I didn't deserve it either. Right. So my invitation for you, dear listener, is to say, no, they don't deserve it. I'm going to forgive anyway. And I'm going to be grateful for what they are and who they are. Because when you really just wash yourselves with the good things of who they are, God will start to show you more good things of who they are. And you start getting a lot happier just as a human. So that would be my tip. If they can do that every morning, good things are on their way.
That's incredible. I love it. And I think that process that you just described is actually what makes us holy, right? It's actually the process of trusting God, forgiving because we're told we need to, and then seeing how it changes us internally.
It's so true.
I just really appreciate it. I just think you have a lovely perspective that is, it's just so easy to not only digest the hard things you're saying, you know, forgive even when you feel so wounded, but you do it in this way that actually I think helps people understand the divinity of this calling of marriage, you know? So many young couples are just looking for something to hold on to. It's like they got into marriage and it's a little tougher than they expected, and their spouse isn't quite as amazing as they thought, and neither are they. And so that we
right.
We just need to give some hope and some, you got this. So I think you did that so beautifully. Well, thank you so much, Bella. This has been such a pleasure.
Yes, it really has. Thank you, Shalom. I really appreciate it.
That's it for this week. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Sexual Mindfulness Project, and subscribe to our website, shalomlevitt.com, to stay up to date with the latest information on sexual mindfulness. Thanks for listening.